ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily, we are in the gather round, the fourth edition, coming at you live from the ABC broadcast box at the glorious Adelaide Oval, one of the prettiest sporting grounds in the world. Don't worry about just here in Australia. We love being back. Corbin and Ben, alongside a very special guest in the absence of Brett Dilidio. He'll be here later in the weekend. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Ben Cameron's here. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Corbin. Good to be back here in a city I lived in for an 18-month period, which, you know, you often forget. But when you roll up to South Australia, people always say, "Welcome to God's country." Felt like we needed Noah's Ark today, didn't it? It rained incessantly from 8 a.m. until about 2 p.m., and then it bucketed down for the second half tonight, but great to be in to gather round 4.0.
Yes, all 18 teams, one place, nine games across 4 days in and around the city of Adelaide. And I said this during the broadcast on ABC Sport last night, that fourth edition, every single year, the first man at the front of the queue ready to board the plane to be here in Adelaide for it and be part of the festivities is the youngest Essendon Premiership player on planet Earth. His name is Adam Ramanauskas, and he's here again. Hello, Ram.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm certainly at the front of the queue to get the gather around. I've enjoyed it every year, and I'll certainly enjoy it again this year. And it was a great start tonight. My favourite thing happened before the game, the light show.
Yes.
You know, I like the light show, Corb. That is something very special. Last year, I was mesmerised. I forgot to talk at stages when the light show was going on. So this year, I actually was able to get some words out. But they put on a great show at Adelaide and the state of South Australia. So hopefully it's night one was terrific. And hopefully the days preceding are also.
So we are in an interesting point at the moment where negotiations are ongoing between the South Australian state government, led by Rama's Lithuanian cousin in Peter Malinauskas.
Long lost.
And also the AFL, led by Andrew Dillon. Whether they can come up with a new long-term deal, which is what South Australia want. Who holds the leverage in these negotiations at the moment, Rama and Corb?
I think it's South Australia. I think South Australia have the whip hand. I think the AFL have played a bad hand here, where, yes, they've got the product, but they don't have anyone else at the table. So every other state government's basically said, "Oh, look, we're not in for it. It's those two that
they need a patsy."
They need someone to at least, you know, think, "Oh, maybe we could move it to WA or Southeast Queensland or whatever." At the moment, the Premier's thinking, and he's not even thinking that. He's actually outwardly come out and said it. Where else are they possibly going to go? They haven't got any other place that's going to be quite like Adelaide. So I think he's going to get it. Who I'm backing in the negotiations is probably more Peter Malinauskas than Andrew Dillon at this stage.
Look, I think they both hold leverage, to be totally honest. So clearly South Australia...
That's a very diplomatic...
Yeah, well, it is.
That's not how leverage works.
Well, I understand that, but I understand that. But the reality of that is South Australia know they put on a great show.
Yeah.
So for that... But the AFL own the product.
Yep.
So it's...
But the AFL aren't even threatening to take it somewhere
else. If you think of what tourism this brings South Australia...
Yes.
Without the product...
That's true.
So they could just say, "We won't do it next year.
We just won't do it."
Yeah.
So it's sort of like...
Everybody loses.
Yeah, well, everybody loses. Now...
That's a bit cutting your nose off to spite your face, isn't it?
But they could clearly take it up to Queensland, Southeast Queensland. So games at the Gabba, games at Carrara. No doubt about that. I still think the most obvious choice is when Tasmania comes into the competition. They've got... They'll have a number of grounds. There's three grounds that they can play there. So the new stadium in Hobart, they've got Bellerive, then they've got York Park as well.
Park's what, 4 hours away from Hobart, though?
It works. You just make it work, Ben.
Oh, I think there's
unique
things.
Who was the person that said about the gravelly road up there? You could, that made its way into the footy vernacular recently. I'll get the spirit of Tasmania over.
I won't. I think there's some very unique elements that make Gather Round in South Australia work. Part of it is the geography, and I don't mean this as disrespectfully as it will sound, but it is almost the halfway house of Australia. People can come from Victoria. They can come from West in WA, meet at a not quite halfway location in South Australia. The fact that the CBD is right there where the majority of people stay.
Yep.
It's a short walk across the bridge to the primary venue. It's very close to Norwood. I know we go out to the Barossa and previously we've gone out to the hills, but I think it all happens so centrally here.
But even the hills and the Barossa, like, you take you an hour to drive across Melbourne, let alone here, you all of a sudden you're in a whole different part of the world, yeah. And it's a beautiful, picturesque environment.
Look,
so
the reality is, if it stays here, fantastic. No one's going to come. But we need to protect this because it's such a great round of football now. Now I spoke earlier tonight, you know, it rivals Anzac round. You know, Anzac round's a very, very special round for other reasons. But in terms of the football in Anzac round, seeing the teams with the jumpers that they wear for that round. But this round, we're going to see some... I don't know if they're retro jumpers. What are we calling them?
There's a bit of everything. Gather round specials.
Yeah.
Just another jumper to put in the rotation for a little more money.
Correct. Merchandise sales are very important to football clubs, Ben.
Corbin, you also dropped some news on the broadcast tonight in the pregame about the wildcard weekend and the addition of wildcard weekend and what it could mean.
So the WA tourism heavies are in town. Mm. So basically a branch of the WA government. They went to a special event at Penfolds last night, which a whole lot of stakeholders at the AFL were at, commission members, CEOs of footy clubs, you know, media heavy hitters and everything else. And essentially the reason they're here is to meet with the AFL. They are looking for premium events at the start and the end of the season. So the start of the season is clearly Origin, what the next iteration of that looks like. There have been concepts put forward, which includes the idea of WA and SA playing on the Friday night and the winner would back up and play on the Sunday on the same weekend. So whether the quarters are dramatically shortened, you might play two short halves and then the winner plays the Vics on a Sunday night. So that is one concept that is in the works, and that's how these things work. You know, ongoing conversations between the state and the AFL. But the more interesting part is the fact that one thing that has been raised in part of this planning and concept building and everything else is the idea that WA or another state government could bid for the right to host the wildcard weekend. Now, at the moment, as it's going to be the case in 2026, we're all thinking 7th and 8th will host the wildcard games, but that is no guarantee to continue at the end of the season. So the AFL will say, look, we assess everything at the end of the year. We hope that it's a huge success with, you know, 7th and 8th hosting. We'll look at it at the end of the year. But they have already had on the whiteboard and in the planning meetings the possibility, if the deal is right and if it gets done, that a single state could purchase the whole thing wholesale, which would essentially mean, let's use Perth as an example. They would purchase the wildcard weekend. It doesn't matter if 7, 8, 9, 10 looks like, you know, Brisbane, Gold Coast, Adelaide, West Coast. Those wildcard games would be played at Perth in back-to-back days, essentially, if a state government won the right to bid on it. So to neutral territory and locked in advance, the same way we have with the AFL Grand Final and, you know, college basketball and the Final Four, that everybody knows well in advance that the wildcard games will be on a neutral site.
College football the same?
All of that.
Well, the only neutral game technically is the Grand Final at the MCG. Now, that's not neutral when a...
And these games. And Gather Round.
And Gather Round, yes, yeah. And Gather Round, sorry. But really, so what the wildcard is obviously there, two more significant games, two more finals, eyeballs on TV, fans at the ground. Now, I look at that and sort of go, well, is it the cash grab for the AFL to sell it to a state, or is it the integrity of the competition, the integrity of the final series?
Well, people would argue already that there's not a whole heap of integrity in a wildcard position.
Why?
Well, I think Chris Scott on Monday night on AFL 360 suggesting... Yeah. That the only reason it's been brought in is for the AFL coffers. And I think, like, if you're not in the do we want more than half the teams qualifying for finals?
Don't forget we used to play many years ago a Final Four or Final Five.
Yeah.
So it has extended out. Now,
I'm just saying that people would already feel that that integrity of those positions isn't there. Yeah. I'm not necessarily one of those people. I wouldn't have wildcard positions, but people... I guess feel that way.
I'm for wildcard.
So am I. But I guess that the argument would be 7th and 8th never used to host anyway. They used to play away finals. The only thing that's changing is that now basically they'll be, if it goes this way, there's still a lot of water that's got to go under the Narrows Bridge before we get there. But essentially they would be neutral sides.
But what about in this scenario? Say Adelaide finish 7th and Fremantle finish 10th.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's Perth or WA, the WA state government, that have bought the wildcard rounds, and all of a sudden they've got the home game, essentially.
Then the hungry social media engines go berserk, and everybody jumps on their laptop and says, how dare they? And it's a whole thing.
Yep.
Look, 7th or 8th.
The Crows say, right in front of me.
But what happens if...
7th or 8th wouldn't get a home final anyway.
But we live through that at the grand final every year.
Of course we do.
If a Victorian team hosts a non-Victorian team or whatever it turns out to be.
Just quickly, what about our boy moving into the new space as well?
I'm not comfortable with this.
He does the midweek tackle now and he's just in the news-breaking space.
How filthy do you reckon I am? Adam Ramanauskas is moving out of the management space. I could have been pestering Rammer every single weekend.
I got a good story about that. When I actually used to work on trade radio early on, I called Adam Ramanauskas and said, mate, you've got these players. I'm just wondering if you're available to come on and have a chat about, player X and their contract. Big, big pregnant pause. Mate, when I got something to say, I'll come on and say it, all right? And that was the end of the call. That was long before I worked with and became friends with Adam Ramanauskas, but... Poor, it was a tetchy call.
He hasn't told me anything about any of his clients in 10 years of us working together. So I can't imagine whether I'm breaking stories or not that makes any difference.
Well, was there a bit of copyright on one of your stories this week also?
Yeah, cool. was my good friend Jared. He was just picking up what I was putting down. Okay. So that's all okay.
Great minds.
28 points Adelaide's win over Carlton to start Gather Round. Given we've got all those other things to chat about, we'll race our way through our three big things, which is what we do on a Thursday night.
Josh Rochelli, 4 goals. Very, very impressive for Adelaide this evening, wasn't he?
I thought he was terrific. Obviously, that first quarter, there was 13 goals kicked combined between Adelaide and Carlton. Rochelli had four of the six of Adelaide's first quarter goals. So he was spectacular in that first quarter. But I also thought, the 26 possessions to go along with the 4 goals, he was really, really important. I gave him the 3 votes tonight.
Outstanding, wasn't he? Carlton never really threatened after that, did they? They kicked 3 goals in a row in the last quarter and got within 17 points, but they were always 1 goal away from making you feel like the game was back on. One thing we did say a lot of tonight was the intervention of the arc.
Yeah.
Every time the ball went out of bounds, it felt like there was some message coming through in the ear as we waited for the conference between the boundary umpire and the field umpire to decide who'd touched it last.
So I was monitoring this very closely on the boundary tonight, and... I thought, Corbin, when we spoke to Greg Swan earlier on in the season on AFL Saturday, which you can hear in this channel every week, I thought he suggested to us that it wouldn't stop the flow of play, that if there was an appropriate amount of time that they would then use the arc to delineate as to whether it had come off Adam Ramanauskas' boot or mine and which way the last disposal out of bounds would go. Now it feels like the umpire, the field umpire that is, the boundary umpire come together and confer, and it's almost like, that takes up 10, 11, 12 Mississippis, and then maybe there's a whisper from the arc. I don't know if that's happening. I'm just asking the question, is that happening? And do we want that to happen?
Correct. Is it umpire-led or is it league-led? That's what I'd be interested in.
I wasn't overly comfortable with tonight because the amount of times the boundary umpire and the field umpire came together, I'm sort of in Ben's camp here where it felt like somebody was in the ear of the field umpire and said, just give us a moment to check that. And that's not what we want. Now, okay, we want accuracy. I completely agree with that. If we got the technology, we want accuracy. But Greg Swan spoke about throughout the whole summer about speeding the game up. Time off the clock. That's not time off the clock. That's just slowing things down. And I thought there was a lot of very incidental ones tonight where it accidentally came off a player's leg.
Yep.
Now, to me... That's not a last touch. That's just incidental.
And people hate this when I say, that the last 2 minutes is different than the first 2 minutes of a game or the first 2 minutes of the second quarter.
Yep.
Absolutely it is.
Yep.
So I understand in the last 2 minutes of a close game, we will forensically look at every decision. But 17 minutes into the second quarter when one side's up by 30 points or whatever it turns out to be, we don't need to be stopping the game to analyse that.
I felt like tonight, of all the games that I've watched over the opening rounds or the opening month of the season, tonight was the most last-touch free kicks.
Yeah, it certainly felt that way, anecdotally. James Peatling was asked about it post-game when Ben Cameron caught up with him in the rooms.
Yeah, I did notice there was a lot of pauses, but I guess we can thank Zach Taylor and Tom Atkins for that. I'd rather him get it right than get it wrong, and we've obviously been on the wrong end of it, and I'd hate games to be decided by that in the future. So I'm happy for them to take the time if they get it right. But, yeah, I mean, the game's pretty quick as it is, so for a couple of us, it's not too bad to get a little spell for about 5 or 10 seconds.
Just on that quickly as well, so the 6-6-6 infringement, which probably didn't cost you the game last week, but sixth time in four seasons that Adelaide has had an apology from the league. Was it quite frustrating internally that, again, the AFL umpiring had kind of let you down?
Well, I've only been here for, 18 months, so personally I'm not frustrated by it because I haven't been involved enough about it. But, yeah, I mean, there's nothing you can do about it after the fact. We just deal with it, move on. I mean, I guess it's nice for them to own up and say they're wrong. You'd rather them do that than just try and hide behind it. So appreciate them for doing it. But, yeah, it's a tough game to officiate. Like, I'm not going to pull anyone over hot coals for it. I definitely couldn't be an umpire. So, yeah, they do an amazing job. And, I'm not going to say anything else. Like, I reckon they're undervalued in our game because we need them.
So that was James Peatling on ABC Sport post-game after the Crows win. The other thing that James Peatling spoke about, Ben, was his little interaction with Patrick Cripps, which brings us to our third of our big three things.
Yeah, so we weren't really sure whether it was a swinging arm from Peatling, a swinging arm from Cripps, or what caused this, but this is James Peatling describing the incident.
Yeah, well, he's about 100 kilos, and I'm not the biggest frame, and just bracing for contact. He was going to bump me, and... yeah, I think my elbow caught his hand, and we chatted about it after the game. He was all good. And even out there, I asked him, and I was like, "How are you?" And he wasn't too bad, and he understood what it was. There was no malice in it. It was making sure I didn't get pushed into the 20th row, really.
So there was a bit of conjecture across different broadcasters as to whether you were sort of half giving him a gut punch, whether he was half giving you a gut punch, and where the contact was made. So he had sort of his hand that hit your elbow.
Yeah, so it was basically like he went to go on his shoulder and I just put my forearm up, and I've got to meet him with some force, because if I don't meet with him with some force, I'm going to end up flat on my ass. So, I was just trying to give back as much as he did, and unfortunately, pretty bony fella, so caught him on the hand, and, yeah, we chatted after, and he said, yeah, it was on the hand, so there was no malice in it, and it wasn't a gut punch, but, yeah, he'll probably have a sore hand for a while.
Oh, I think you'll be all right with that, looking at the replays. But he then got a free kick because I think the umpire saw him keeled over. Did you know what had happened at that point?
Yeah, obviously they thought I'd gut punched him, but no, that wasn't the case. It was, I just flushed him on the hand, and hopefully it's not broken or anything like that. But yeah, just trying to protect myself, because last thing I want is a hip and shoulder through the middle of my chest. So I think... yeah, no, maybe at worst, hopefully I don't have to lose any money out of my pocket. I've already had that once this year, so that would be nice to avoid, but there's nothing here. He said it was all good, so, yeah.
Pretty bizarre, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I think it was more of a swinging arm from Cripps that ended up with his hand hitting Peatling. I wouldn't be surprised if he's got a broken hand, Patrick Cripps, out of that as well. So he's probably injured himself there, Patrick Cripps, but I think Peatling will be fine.
Let's just get a word from Michael Voss. The Blues always under the spotlight. This is what he had to say post-game.
Like today, I felt like it was, effectively some fundamentals. Coughing the ball up when we didn't need to. Some really basic things, two high free kicks. In the tackle, we gave away an enormous amount of free kicks through the second quarter. So there was a bit of that, and we just couldn't stop them scoring when they went inside 50. So, of the presence they got, they just scored too many times. So we've just got to be a bit better in those moments. When you do lose territory, we have to be able to defend tighter for longer. And we weren't able to do that. And so their scoreboard just, kept ticking along.
Any redeeming qualities tonight for the Blues?
Look, I thought their first quarter was terrific. Particularly through centre bounce clearance. They kicked 4 goals, 2. From centre bounce, they won clearance 17-9 in that first quarter. So they were really dominating in that phase of the game. But the Crows really dominated the second quarter, 5 goals in 9 minutes, an arm wrestle in the third quarter, which I thought Adelaide actually won the arm wrestle. I thought they out-toughed them in that third quarter, particularly when it was raining and, Ben Cameron got absolutely drenched down on the boundary.
My jeans are still soaking wet, and wet jeans is not a nice feeling.
No. Yeah, and then when they had their opportunities in that fourth quarter, it just feels like they're one key forward short. Like, I like Brody Kemp as a player.
Well,
but
Charlie Kerno or someone?
Of course. That's what I'm getting to. But I don't feel like Brody Kemp's a second tall forward option. I feel like he's a third tall forward option. So they do need to find another option down there.
I worry about him. I worry that even their best puts them on the mid-table treadmill. I don't know. If they played lights out and they were absolutely humming and they were firing on all cylinders, what does it max out at? It doesn't max out at Brisbane on grand final day, does it? It maxes out probably something a little bit shorter than.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know where that leaves you. The rest of the round. So we've got another 8 games to get through. Let's see if we can try and do it in a dozen minutes or so, and then our Superdog selections to get us out of here. So Collingwood and Fremantle, Friday night footy. It's a fun game here at the Adelaide Oval tomorrow. At Adelaide Oval tomorrow night. Craig McRae takes centre stage here after his comments last July. Do they add spice to this contest? If you don't remember them, Ramory said they, talking about Fremantle, play a good brand of footy when they're up and going fast. Maybe they should play a little bit more of that at times. It's a good version of them. It's pretty rare that we hear a senior coach comment on an opposition team. Does it add a little bit more spice to the Friday night blockbuster?
Yeah, I do. Now, I don't think that Craig McRae would mean any malice in that comment, but I think it would certainly prick the ears up of some Fremantle people around, well, yeah, how they do play football. Now, I'm all in on Freo. I like them. I like them a lot.
Premiership in?
I think they're definite top four team.
And as we know, the WA team's top two is important too, so make sure you win those two finals. And that's when the Eagles had success. They rarely had to leave in September.
I spoke to a West Coast Eagles assistant in 2019 after they'd won it in 2018. And they said to me the players felt like, and they felt like, it was enormous for them that they didn't travel from their last game of the season, because they had the pre-finals bye, then they had the home final, week off, home prelim, grand final, so they didn't travel for a 5-week period. I'll move on from that game.
Just one quick one. A very smart person in footy put to me about the Craig McRae comments last year when they happened, that he just pondered whether he was finishing an argument that he'd had maybe with one of his assistant coaches during the week. So when they would say they're in the coach's room and they're debating how the Dockers play, and they're saying, oh, they do this, but they're so conservative. And then someone else is arguing, oh, they should go quick more. And then it was almost like in Craig McRae's response, he was remembering a conversation that he'd had earlier in the week with someone where he basically says, oh, they should go quick a bit more often, almost saying, hey, that's right, we had that conversation. And he was almost like finishing another thought that he'd had with somebody else, and it spilt out on, in front of the nation or whatever in his post-match press conference. I actually thought that was a pretty good reason as to why or how he got there.
You always have to remember how Fremantle was set up when Justin Longmuir first came to them. It was a game based on defence. So they'll always reference back defence. Mm-hmm. Now, I think their attacking flair is coming as they're maturing, but they'll always reference defence first.
North Melbourne and the Brisbane Lions. Are the Lions being disrespected by being kept away from the Adelaide Oval for a fourth straight year and gather round?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yep, I think the reigning premier deserves to play at the best venue or the best ground of wherever that round is. Now, gather round here is here. I know they would be looking at what type of crowd that they're getting, but what type of crowd are they going to get for Essendon and Melbourne here tomorrow on Saturday?
I think they'll get a few more. I spoke about this on the broadcast last night. I'm actually the other way. I feel like there's a reason Brisbane haven't banged the table about this and complained too loudly. I actually think they look at North Melbourne and North Melbourne look at them and they go, we're the perfect dance partner for one another. Mm. And what I mean by that is that Brisbane don't want to host North and North don't want to host Brisbane. So if it's a neutral site, great. Everybody's happy with that. Instead, if Brisbane played here at the Adelaide Oval, they would need a big drawing dance partner. And Brisbane don't want that because they want to play the good teams at the MCG like Collingwood and Geelong and so on and so forth. And they want to host the big drawing teams that aren't necessarily good, like Essendon and Carlton, because they know that they'll bring people through the gate at the Gabba. So if they had to play one of those teams here, they wouldn't then get to play them around the corner in another game.
Would you come here and watch Brisbane and Fremantle or Brisbane and Sydney?
So I actually think you could make that argument here more than anywhere else, because there's so many neutrals that you would hope it would pull them through the gate.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, it's more of a risk than it is Collingwood Fremantle tomorrow night, for example. And that there's a certain reality to that. There's a reason why Carlton played the game against Adelaide, and Adelaide Brisbane would have been a fun game tonight. But there's a reason why they lean so heavily on those big Victorian teams.
Essendon and Melbourne, Saturday afternoon here at the Adelaide Oval. We'll all be broadcasting that game.
Yeah.
Will Max Gawn be the first nine-time All-Australian?
Well, it's very much looking that way. If he continues in this vein of form as he started the season, it's an absolute certainty.
Yep.
I think so.
He's in the team right now, isn't he? Absolutely. And whether he's in the team at the end of August, we'll wait and see.
Well, someone's got to take his spot. That's correct. That's the way I see it.
You've got to take the belt off him, don't you?
Yeah. If he's playing this way, somebody has to play better than that. And no other ruckman in the competition is playing better than his level at the moment.
He's had a phenomenal start to the year. Can't wait to see him live again on Saturday. This is my favourite game of the round. Is it the best game of Gather Round Edition 4? The Sydney Swans and the Gold Coast Suns. Is this the pick of the set of nine, Ram?
Yeah, I think this is a good one. Now, Damien Hardwick was seething after the game last week against Melbourne. So I'm very interested in the response from the Suns. It's if they're going to be a good team, the Suns, it's got to be a mature response. So I'm expecting them to win the game if they're going to be up to their eyeballs in it at the end of the season. If they come out and sort of serve up the we think we're a good team, but we don't want to do the hard work to be a good team.
Yeah.
Well, they'll get the result that they got against Melbourne.
Do you remember back in primary school when they used to bring out the big plastic mat and they put it down and all the paints came out and you got to do some painting? And then you got the red paint.
Arts and craft.
You got the red paint and the white paint and you put it together. Do you know what colour it made?
Pink.
What colour do you think the Suns are wearing?
Pink.
Against the red and white team. So let's see how that goes. The Sydney Swans up against the Gold Coast Suns. The red and white Swans, which literally makes pink. Against a team that's wearing pink. Of all weeks, they could possibly wear that jumper.
Was there a point to that story?
Why would you possibly do that? Red and white makes pink, and they're playing against that team that's wearing it.
Okay.
It's amazing.
Hawthorn of the Western Bulldogs. What should we read into Sam Mitchell's management switch? Ooh. Now, this is right in your wheelhouse.
I never truly read into management switches too much. Because it's happening more and more regularly now.
Why do you think that is?
Oh, I don't know. Just personality clash. Could be something that they want more off-field opportunity.
More commercially minded.
Yeah, it could be any of that. Now, look, I know that Sam works pretty closely with the network company that Bravo Media is about. So there could be a bit of life after football with that side of things as well.
It didn't escape me, by the way, that this was reported and then discussed on Channel 7, which Rainmaker, which Craig Hutchison's television arm essentially owns. Craig Hutchison's Bravo management now contracts Sam Mitchell. And he's contracted until the end of 2027. And you know what they did on the agenda setters that night? They debated Tasmania coming in the competition in 2028. And, the Hawthorn will want to be careful. They better sign him up to a new deal and make sure that Tassie don't swoop and take him. On the same night that conversation took place, that conversation was had. So read into that whatever you will. But Hawthorn up against the Western Bulldogs. The Dogs, an 8.5-point underdog, despite being the only undefeated team.
I'm surprised with that. Now, Ed Richards has been picked for that game also, which is another surprise. So.
And Sicily and Gunston, both hurt on Monday, short week, both playing.
Yep, and Jack Scrimshaw is managed in that game. So, look, it's hard to pick against the Dogs at the moment. I think it was like against Essendon last week, they were playing with their food a little bit. Yep, Essendon were better in that game, but the Dogs, they could have, particularly in that first quarter, they could have opened up a 7-8-9 goal lead quite comfortably.
Geelong and West Coast, not much to discuss in this game. Outside of the question here, Rama, do the Eagles have the best gather-round jumper with the Ioka?
I didn't mind the Crows one tonight.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah. Corbin hated it. Yeah. But he's not really a man who knows fashion.
So. I wouldn't say I hated it. It just wasn't in my top half of jumpers. I think Adelaide have had better gather-round jumpers.
One thing that I am happy about, and this might be a little bit controversial, but I'm happy that Mark Blitzarv is being rested, so he'll play his 300th game down at Cadinia Park.
Not at the famed the parade down at Norwood. He could have played it there.
There is still a little bit of romance left in football.
the ochre jumper is real hot. I'm a big fan of what the West Coast Eagles are rolling out come Sunday. We'll fly through these last two games, GWS and Richmond. Whose injury list is worse at the moment?
Well, significant ins for GWS. If you look, Jack Buckley, Brent Daniels, Toby Bedford, Aaron Cadman, all coming back into the team. So they're starting to get a few troops back, the Giants.
So the Tigs.
Yeah, definitely the Tigs. Okay. They've got a worse injury list.
And then Nasir Wanganeen-Malira was the first $2 million man in the AFL. Is Zach Butters the next?
Well, yeah, if Naz is getting that type of money, I think Zach Butters' resume is better than Naz's.
I'm fascinated what happens on the Butters front. Because if he... Like, say he wants to nominate the club he needs to go to. You would think surely he doesn't walk into like the Western Bulldogs or Geelong or whatever and say, hey, $2 million or whatever. No. So he's going to have to take unders to go there. Yeah. And then those clubs, presumably, Port Adelaide are saying, hey, we'll match it. They're going to want a bunch of draft picks. And the best picks of those teams are going to have are picks, you know, 15, 16, 17, yeah. 18, the and way look, it's trendy.
And the reality is, it's what drives you as a footballer. Is it the money or is it success? Now,
but how do you get a deal done unless you move players out and all sorts of things?
That's right. Now, that's what will be negotiated before the time.
Wow. That'd be awkward, wouldn't it? Hey, Zach Butters is on the way, which, hey, he's like my favourite player in the competition. I can understand that. But you got to go knock on a few doors and say, would you mind going somewhere else? We can get a top 10 pick in or whatever it turns out to be, and we'll ship that straight to Port Adelaide to make sure Butters is here.
What number is Sullivan Roby going to wear?
He's
going to
wear number 9.
Yeah, I might have just left that locker empty for a year just in case there's a certain player who might have wanted to come to Tullamarine and wear number 9.
If that's the case, I'm sure Sullivan Roby will happily move up one if it means he can call Zach a teammate.
It could be Andrew Lockyer. No, it wasn't Andrew. Was it Jordan Lockyer?
Jordan Lockyer.
Lockyer at Sydney had to vacate the number 23 for Big Budwa.
He got a little financial reward, didn't he?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm. Well remunerated. All right, Ram. I know you're sort of first-time podcast guest, but a long-time listener. So
yes,
you're familiar with the Superdog selections. What happens here? You got to pick an underdog from the week. You get 5 points if they cover. You get 5 points and the outright winning margin if your underdog wins outright, which happened last week. Ben Cameron selected Melbourne with a 20.5-point head start. They beat the Suns by 20 points. So he gets 5 for the cover, 20 points for the winning margin. That gives him 25 on his season tally, which already sat at 22. So Ben's out on top on 47 points. Brett Delidio's on 5, Corbin Middlemass on 5. So we both struck out last week. So Lids had the Pies. They didn't cover. And I had the Eagles with a 29.5-point head start. I needed another 100. They lost by 128 against Sydney last week. So the eligible games this week, you can take Collingwood with a 12.5-point head start against the Dockers. You can take North Melbourne plus 34.5 against Brisbane. Essendon are catching 26.5 against the Ds. I'll give you West Coast with a 45.5-point head start against Geelong. Or you can take Richmond with 34.5 points against the Giants. The other games are too close to call.
For Brett Delidio, I will take North Melbourne.
Okay.
North Melbourne.
Kangas with a 34.5-point head start.
I'll take the Pies, please.
That's very predictable and very boring. I'm going to take the West Coast Eagles to bounce back. I'm going to stick with the Eagles 2 weeks in a row. That they're getting 45.5. Geelong are not usually the kind of team that absolutely pulverise sort of hapless opponents. They kind of do what they have to do and get in, get out. So I think the Eagles... little skinny cigarette-shaped ground down there at Norwood. So
cigar-shaped is what Mick says.
That then, sure. If that's the thing you want to pick me up on the way out. We're done. Did you appreciate your rain jacket down there on the boundary?
I did, but my jeans are drenched.
Can't do anything about that. I'll see you tomorrow.
Sounds good. Enjoy. I'll see you then.
The footy all weekend right here on ABC Sport. Great hit out from you, Ram.
No, thank you for having me. I'll happily come back anytime.
Thanks to Jules Hay as well, back in the studio for holding it all down. We are out on ABC AFL Daily. 5 conversations each week right here through ABC AFL.